RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Wednesday morning is our Legal Hub morning here at RCR, and I want to welcome back to Legal Hub Katie Ashby Coppins. Hi, Katie. Good to have you back.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, listeners.
And joining us for this episode, this ep of Legal Hub, is Sean Rush, Wellington-based barrister holding a Master's in Law and a Master's in Climate Science and Policy. It gives you a clue into or as to what we're about to talk about. He's a former Wellington City Councillor, ACT Party candidate for Otaki, president of the Public Interest Law and Science Initiative, a not-for-profit, which brings honest and accurate science to decision-makers to deliver evidence-based policy and lawmaking. Joining us from the beautiful town of Otaki, Sean, thanks for coming in on our Legal Hub today.
Oh, lovely to be here, Paul. Nice to see you again. And Katie, it's great to work with you. I've been impressed with some of the work you've done previously, so it's a bit of a privilege, actually.
Okay, you got a fan there, Katie, already. You got a fan. Though I'm a fan too, so you got two at least. All right, we're here to talk, and we've had quite an interesting few days on this, actually, and a lot of feedback. Government inquiry on climate adaptation for managed retreat / planned relocation currently open for submissions until 16th June 2024. Okay, where do we want to start in our talk about this? Who wants to go first? Sean, you're most on it. So
yeah, I suppose I've fallen into this has come on my radar as a consequence of my climate studies, sea level rise, and as a city councillor as well, I was very interested in the different climate indicators around Wellington and up the Kapiti Coast. So the Kapiti Coast has got a long history of tension between city council trying to impose development constraints, hazard lines on the LIM reports, which obviously make things a bit difficult if you want to sell, and restrictions on renovations and so forth. So going back to 2013, the Kapiti Coast Council tried to impose a series of measures that would have devalued properties, coastal properties that people live in and people have retired to. It would made it complicate things getting a mortgage, complicate insurance, all because they were using a climate model that was deemed unrealistic, and they got taken to court and the court agreed, and so they stood down. It's back again, not just on the Kapiti Coast this time, but as a consequence of the last government's initiative requiring under a national policy statement that all councils come up with a coastal hazard management plan, and that's kickstarted all around New Zealand various councils trying to take a good look, as they should, at the risks around their coast. And here in the Kapiti Coast, once again though, but this time under the advice of the Ministry for the Environment, they're being told that you must use this highly unrealistic model. It was unrealistic back in 2013. The IPCC now call it implausible, and yet the Ministry for the Environment are saying in their guidance that councils need to use it, planners need to use it. And of course, when you use an implausible model that sort of soups the whole climate thing up, you end up with climate outcomes that are hopelessly unrealistic. You know, you end up with possible inundation happening all the way from the Kapiti Coast now to State Highway 1, which is 2 kilometres away. Well, the sea has not been there for about 5,000 years, and actually the Kapiti Coast is slowly getting closer to Australia as the accretion trends continue there. So this particular inquiry is I think, the National Party and the coalition government's attempt to balance an inquiry which was done under the previous government that wasn't particularly well publicised and attracted, the environmental lobby group to provide submissions. And they are very much of the view that we use these high, unlikely scenarios which then has an impact on the human population and brings us all back into a place where the where we can all reside in high density accommodation,
right.
Return the coast to the natural environment. I mean, that's one sort of, it's a bit conspiracy theory, but in reality, that's kind of the effect. The last government had kicked off a round of what they call managed retreat, which is part of this adaptation planning. Now, that's
it's all in the term, isn't it? I mean, managed retreat. It says what it is, doesn't it?
Well, it is. Yes,
we'll manage
and
you'll retreat.
So, you know, we see parallels just so that folks can get a handle on where we're coming from here. So we have natural disasters, and some of them may have anthropogenic, you know, impacts, but, you know, the Christchurch earthquake and people there who were unable to go back to their homes because the city council decided that it was too risky for them. Now, in my home, I can do all sorts of risky things if I choose to.
Yeah.
For 44 years, I went out and played rugby, you know, despite the high risk of injury. And yet the city council actually facilitated that by providing...
They weren't managing the retreat off the field.
Exactly right. So what you sort of start to think to yourself, look, you know, if you've got a Cyclone Gabrielle and people have been wiped out and they need to be relocated, you know, people will buy that. But there might be some people will say, well, actually, I can fix this old girl up and I'll rather stay living here. I've got precious memories. I've got kids that grew up here. You know, so why on earth would we try and stop them? I mean, I can totally understand if the city is no longer able to provide utility services, right? So, you know, the stormwater pipe now is under the sea level for twice a day, and as a consequence, when there's a keen tide, there's a bit of flooding and the water can't drain away. Well, you buy a pump. You don't sort of come up with this multi-million-dollar strategy.
Put the pipe up a few feet, yeah. Okay, well, the submissions you're talking about, is that the 147, 16 from individuals, the third from Wellington, mostly local and regional councils, businesses, banking and insurance? Is that the one?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's right, Paul. And, you know, the sort of the direction the last government was taking this under the same Ministry for Environment was towards... they were getting advice that was being sort of described as the working group, but actually the working group was the Environmental Defence Society. It wasn't the Ministry for the Environment. It was the EDS funded by insurance companies. The Wellington City Council funded it too. And there is a Becker, you know, a coastal engineering company. I mean, it's just laughable that you'd actually take submissions from, you know, work that was delivered from them and
the
not,
head of a pin, in other
words. Look, let's not be overly critical, but you should be actually saying, well, thanks very much, Becca, but you've got a dollar in this. I'd like to hear from someone who doesn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can talk to, you know, anyone who lives on the coast, pretty much anywhere in New Zealand, except maybe Tongoya, which, you know, is got an erosion trend and is really affecting the properties. But, you know, the South Coast, where my constituents were of Wellington, will tell you we've been living here for 50 years. It looks all the same. And the scientists go, well, no, it's not the same. It's not the same. And you go, well, actually, why should I believe a scientist who doesn't live here?
Yeah, and I'm standing on the rocks and I can see what's going on. Katie, someone's made a decision to use that worst case scenario willfully, with the knowledge that it's not fit for purpose. How do we explain that?
Or look, it's not proportionate or it hasn't been tested. And, you know, I think that the explanation, I don't know what the background explanation it is, but, you know, certainly the worst case scenario is producing a very unsatisfactory situation where these worst case scenarios are then appearing in reports, they remain untested, and they're not being considered by alternative experts, they're not being properly trialled, they're being latched onto, and then they're being utilised for the benefit of, you know, the council who might want to have this managed retreat as an issue. And, you know, we can see that the situation that we've got with the two governments and that we have changed recently, we've had similar submission opportunities or feedback opportunities granted to people, very limited announcement of those in respect to the international house regulations, for example. And then when you start letting people know about them, your 16 feedback or 16 supportive feedbacks that was given in May last year turns out to be 3,800 very concerned people in March of this year when you start letting people know about these things. So, look, it seems quite incredible. Again, we've got the culprit modelling. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, it sure does. It's like the PCR test for land is what I think of it. You just keep dialing it up until you get what you want.
We've got your safety, another factor.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
And, you know, it just seems like a very similar model that's being rolled out and not being properly or fully tested.
Sure.
I mean, could I just make a comment, given this is Legal Hub, I mean, the law is pretty clear about how we assess the effects of climate change going forward. And it's very clear under the Climate Change Response Act that we are to consider the likely effects of climate change. Now, to me, a likely effect means that we use a model that is actually adhering to the sort of trends that we see and that we forecast as well. The IPCC said about the high-end scenarios in the most recent report, in which I was an expert reviewer, that it was considered more and more less likely than other more moderate models. Now, if I'm using a considerably less likely model to assess my sea level rise and other climate indicators going forward, then I'm going to get a considerably less likely climate change effect. That is a direct contradiction to what the legislation is telling us. And the Ministry for Environment have actually run, to be fair, these models have been developed by the IPCC in the mid-2000s. Originally, the top end was considered to be maybe the world that we might be going towards. But more recently, it's been described as a dystopian world where we have to burn six times more coal than we actually have, and is implausible. I mean, the climate modelling community met in Bangkok last year, had a good chinwag about all this, and wrote it all up and published a pre-publication back last year. And literally a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, it got published in a major journal, and it said that these high ends are now regarded as the world, the emissions world avoided. And they want to stop the emphasis on these high-end models, because obviously when you use a souped-up model, then you get really newsworthy sort of results. Yeah. And unfortunately, that is distracting huge amount of scientific resources away from actually doing models that produce a useful result. And the climate modelers know this, and they've said, look, we need to keep – there's always a place for these high-end models because they are interesting on an academic level. But on a policy relevant level, they aren't. And, it was comical, actually, the Ministry for Environment, they cite one particular leading modeler in his paper. And there's a subheading, a subtitle in that paper that says, stop using the high-end models for policy making.
Man.
So, if I was someone who was interested in judicial review, and I've just finished a Victoria University course on it for the last 6 months, I would say that the Ministry for Environment are introducing an irrelevant consideration. It's distracting decision makers from a mandatory mandatory consideration, which is to use a likely model. And as a consequence, we're getting a whole bunch of stuff that isn't really going to happen. And there's a real concern. Professor Dave Frame from he's a Canterbury University IPCC scientist, well-recognised, one of the leading guys in New Zealand. I mean, he said of a recent Auckland planning decision that, you know, why would you use a climate model that no one believes? It's just going to lead to legal liability. And, you know, for lawyers like me and Katie, well, that's great. We'll have a lot of interesting and academic debates in courts and so forth. But in the end, this is about humans. This is about people living on the coast and wanting to enjoy their own properties that they've invested in, wanting to put another story on, as I have to, because my place is now got so far away from the coast because it keeps moving away, and there's a 5 meter
Sean, you're not really in it. You're not really seeing that. I'm sorry to tell you, you're fantasizing it, yeah, and you're listening to the wrong people.
So Paul, you know, I mean, I heard all that, and we get told that the scientists have said this, and you need to just believe it. So I went back to university and studied it. I'm a smart guy. And I thought, well, if I can't figure this out, then there's probably something not quite right going on here. And, you know, in the end, you sort of look at it, you go, yeah, I get the greenhouse effect. I get this. I look at the tide gauge. It's well below the peak as it was in 2016. I see the beach getting further and closer to Australia. And I think, well, what's really going on here?
Yeah, well, what is really going on? Katie, this is potentially an overlay for everywhere, isn't it? Everywhere in here and probably other places as well. Seems like a grand scheme to dumb guy off the street like me.
Look, potentially it could have impacts if you've got consultants that councils are paying for that are utilising or adopting a high level model as opposed to a proportionate level model, then you're going to get situations where councils are going to be applying these reports, potentially untested, across people's, you know, property.
Well, it's already on the limbs, isn't it? Already on the limbs.
Some limbs are getting these reports added to them, yes, and then that's infecting their ability to get insurance because their property is now considered high risk. And then I think one of the considerations for managed retreat is when you can't get insurance. So it's this beautiful circular coincidence, perhaps, where you've got a report which gets put on your limb, which then results in you not being able to get insurance, and then you've got a situation where managed retreat.
And the retreat is kind of outsourced in that way.
Correct. Blame the experts. Yeah. And this is the thing. When you are in court and when you have a court case, you will have two different parties, and then you'll have a party that produces an expert report on a particular subject, and generally they have another expert that on the other side that produces an expert report. And then often what happens is you come together and the experts come, and it's called a hot tub, which is a terrible name for most of the people I know as experts because I don't want to envisage any of them in a hot tub.
I've sat in a hot tub. I've been in a hot tub in London as a lawyer, and I've also given evidence as a climate guy too.
Yeah, it's so important. So what they do is you're like, what can you guys agree on or what do you not agree on? And so let's get to the bottom of what you can agree on, and let's get you guys to work together to see if you can come to a situation of what you can't agree on, so then we're only dealing with a certain few things for the court so that the judge doesn't have to go through all different aspects of it. This is not happening in this situation. There is only one report. The report's not able really to be tested because the council's only preferring one and they're preferring the worst case scenario one. So I understand there's been more work done around reports, and Sean will be much closer to that information than what I am. But this is a situation where the report that's being relied on by the council and added to people's limbs are the worst case scenario.
I want to just ask if, Sean, you're probably best to answer this because I went to the public meeting. I've talked to people, you know, again, guy on the street sort of view of things. There seems to be a few fishy elements. The Jacobs report, no paper trail in Kapiti. Worst case scenario used. An angry Mr. Bolter on the phone. He doesn't like, you know, we have to explain these things somehow. Is there anything legalistic attached to all of that?
I found it very troubling. So did the ombudsman, that Jacobs, who are the engineering consultants to the Kapiti Coast District Council, didn't seem to have a terms of reference. didn't seem to have a contract, you know, and I've worked in multinationals and they have policies and, you know, there are thresholds and something like this would have to be signed off by a high level, you know, executive vice president. They would have bid for it. They would have bid all around the country. So I find that very troubling. What I find troubling, Paul, is also is, you know, we're exposed to a narrative. I talk to my friends, my mum and dad about, you know, things that I know because I've tooled up on this sort of thing. You know, for example, I mean, we're told that the frequency of tropical cyclones and the intensity are getting worse, but that's not what the IPCC says at all. I can quote you right now that they say there is low confidence in the long-term trends in the frequency of all category tropical cyclones. So they don't really have any data to show this. And tropical cyclone Gabrielle, that was predicted 9 months in advance by the NIWA Met Office annual tropical cyclone season you know, projections. They said, well, we're going to have 6 or 10 tropical cyclones. One, maybe more, might come close to the coast of New Zealand. I mean, that's what the best they could, but they were right. So, you know, we've also got this narrative that we're getting a lot more rain, and, you know, we have had some very heavy rainfall in the last couple of years, probably the La Nina weather system. But the Statistics New Zealand record that a bit of a mixed bag in New Zealand between 1960 and 2019, in both summer and winter, rainfall increased in some stations in the South Island, decreased in other stations in the North Island. Most station trends are not statistically significant. So you start going to yourself, well, okay, you can look at the tide gauge and it's about 2.5 millimetres a year getting, you know, increasing. But if you've got an El Nino or La Nina, that makes a big difference of, you know, centimetres sort of thing. And if you've got one of these tropical cyclones that comes close to the coast, the low pressure system actually sucks the sea right up and you will have for a short period massive inundation, but it's a short period. And, you know, when that happens and it comes, you know, it could happen next year, next season, it won't be climate change, but it'll be really bad luck. I mean, Gabrielle came right down the coast of the east coast of the North Island, whereas the one from 1990, Bola actually tracked, it stopped at the top of the North Island and went around the west coast. So, you know, these things, and there's no sort of rhyme or reason as to which way they go, and there's probably some theories, but... You know, so you start to think to yourself, well, okay, not really much going on in the weather systems over the last 30, 50 years. Why are we having this mad panic about adaptation at the cost, not just of, you know, ratepayers, but this is parliamentary time, this is Ministry of Environment folks that could be doing really good things like, you know, we could be funding Transpower to not build the bloody substation in Tararua on a floodplain. They knew that was a problem. They knew it was a problem and they did nothing about it. So Gabrielle, I'm a Hawke's Bay boy, so I'm passionate about this. Gabrielle was a tale of two cities, Hastings, which had electricity all the way through, and my hometown, Napier, which didn't. And, you know, there was a very, very different outcome for those folks with, you know, anyone with a generator kept them very quiet because the mongrel mob were going around and stealing them. You know, it was pretty desperate times for a while. And, you know, the public of New Zealand, to their credit, responded as we do. But it's nothing, it's no dissimilar to what happened in 1931, same thing, Esk Valley flooded. The Mission Seminary, that which used to be out in Miani, that got relocated up to the Tararua Hills where I grew up. And, you know, and people haven't learned. So what one of the things we should be very much alive to is let's not focus on the sort of human increment of, you know, changing weather patterns, but let's look at the human footprint and where we're putting that footprint and then what we need to do to ensure that we are resilient in the face, not just of course, bad weather events, but we've got the earthquake risk.
What are we going to do about that? Are we going to have a retreat from earthquakes?
Well, the thing is, Paul, that earthquakes are very sensitive. You know, again, Hawke's Bay, 1931. But recent evaluation that I've seen suggests that over the last 100 years, we've had 400 deaths from earthquakes. You know, we get more than that on the roads every year.
That's the roadkill. 90
drownings every year. And so, you know, this was brought up in the conversation about seismic resilience and all the money that people are now having to throw at strengthening their apartments in Wellington and Christchurch and so forth.
Yeah, but it was the new buildings that fell down.
Yeah, but I mean, all those buildings,
and the big one,
these buildings that need to be strengthened are they're still standing, still usable. And if someone wants to carry on living there knowing that it's sub code, you know, go let them. You know, why should we stop them? I mean, the council doesn't stop me. It'd like to stop me jaywalking, but, you know, there are a lot of things that freedoms that people accept that have much higher risk than the 400 folks that have died, unfortunately, in earthquakes over the last 100 years.
I mean, it's this catastrophizing of everything.
Yep.
There's no proportionality that has been given to the risk. You know, benefit analysis that we come back to so regularly of, is this where we should be exerting and putting all of our pies?
Because it knocks up against private or property rights in the end, doesn't it?
Exactly
and,
right.
And do they not mean anything kind of now?
So you've got, in my view, you've got the traditional big government, little government, kaupapa going on, and that traditionally lines up sometimes on left and right wing, I suppose, politics, which is a bit unfortunate, really. But I mean, you know, if you're someone who trusts the government, thinks that they all and government, we should, you know, take a lot of tax, you know, and be embraced by the big brother government, and that's fine. I mean, personally, I know that I'm far more qualified than pretty much anyone in Parliament, and I'm highly capable of looking after myself and my family and those around me. So, you know, I'll take an individualistic view and I'll say, well, actually, can you just go away? I'm going to build a seawall with my neighbour or, you know, or I'm going to buy an umbrella.
Yeah, you can have an RCR one. We'll send you RCR umbrella.
Beautiful.
Okay, so submissions until the 16th of June, will it make any difference? I mean, I know Calm have got a template on their website. We've done the template thing. That multiplies the effect, but are they listening? Do they listen?
Yeah, look, I think they do. I really do. We've got a change in government since this started, and I think that there is, a huge power to people joining together and putting their voice and making themselves heard about their rights that they don't want to see eroded. And property ownership is, you know, I thought it was inalienable, virtually as a right. You know, a few things could happen where they could put something on your property. But
a motorway.
Once you bought, it was your property, and there might be a few bits and pieces and a few minor excuses, but or exceptions. But you know, this is broad. This is, you know, anyone that, you know, might border an ocean or any water 2 kilometres from the coast. It's a huge risk, and it's concerning. So, you know, people do need to voice their concerns and opinions. And we saw that with the feedback on the international health regulations in March. There went from 16 people that gave feedback to 3,800. The government listens. They rewrote their cabinet paper following that feedback that was given.
Yep.
And so they do listen. It also forms a part of the public record. And so they can't say that they didn't know that people were pretty annoyed and pretty unhappy about this. Well, I do get frustrated about is the sheer arrogance and ignorance of these supported elected officials or public servants that are there to do work for us. We pay their salaries in councils, in government. They need to listen to their constituents. That is who their master is.
What about limb reports? And I know you've got to go, Sean, because you've got something else you've got to do, but anyone with an affected limb report, I mean, the first thing that should happen while all this is going down is that any reference to this should be removed, shouldn't it?
I think definitely the, and this is what's happened in a large swath of the Kapiti Coast properties, including mine. I had no idea that the council had put on my LIM report a warning that this area could be subject to inundation, and that this warning would be updated at the conclusion of some research they're doing. And, you know, which is kind of like, well, I'm not going to buy your place because you might be underwater next year, sort of thing.
Exactly.
And the real estate agent community have confirmed that that's indeed what is happening. We've had one person say that their insurance company refused to go forward anymore because of that particular warning. That's not a widespread thing, but certainly on one occasion. I think, Paul, that, you know, people we'd like to encourage to submit on this. Look, there's a lot of, if you go onto the website and there's a lot of information there which is confusing, it talks about financial tools and so on. Just go on there and type out how you see how your weather has played out over the last years that you've lived there. What are the things that have been quite extreme? How have you coped with them? And just give a bit of a personal insight. I really would like to encourage particularly those in the farming and horticultural industries that actually keep really good data on how much rain has fallen and what was the crop yields in particular years, and pick up those trends that the scientific community don't have access to. Put all that in, ignore the pro forma stuff, you know, it's confusing and so on, but put down your own personal story. You're like, you know, I've owned my property since 2013, but my neighbour's been there since 1950, and here's a photograph of it then, and you can see that the beach is right on my doorstep, and that would have been definitely an inundation risk then, but now it's 150 metres away and it's going to carry on going until we go to... We could put another row of houses in front of my place now, actually. So, you know, just unique insights like that from real people, and maybe we can sort of like, so, well, actually, I'm seeing this with my own eyes, and I'm sick of having what they call gaslighting, which is, you know, stop trusting your own perceptions. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, we've got smart people all around New Zealand who are smarter than a lot of others who are telling us what to do. Maybe it's about time, as Katie said, you started listening to them.
Sean, thanks for coming in on our Legal Hub. I know you've got to go and do.
Lovely to be here. I really love this little stuff. Section that you do. I've listened to it before, being a lawyer, as you know. So look forward to it. And, you know, anytime, happy to come on and talk about other things. So good as gold. Cheers.
Good to know. Thank you, Sean. All right, that's Sean Rush. We've got a few minutes left. A couple of, one other thing. I think, Katie, you've coined a new word or something, census-less. You've got to say that slowly, otherwise you're going to have trouble with it. What is census-less?
Yeah, look, this is senseless is what it is. Look, this is the situation where our government has announced that they will no longer be doing the four-yearly census. You would have probably remembered that there was a bit of excitement about the census last year when we did it about some of the questions that were asked on it. There was the opportunity to do an electric version or electronic version of the census or a hard copy version.
I did a comedy version.
Yes, and I'm sure that you did, and I do recall that, Paul. And you could get it delivered by the enumerator, and then they would come and pick it up, and you would handwrite your answers, which included things like, you know, what's your income, how many people in your household, how much do you spend at the supermarket, you know, questions that you are asked to provide the information. Stats New Zealand are going to suggest, and they're requesting feedback, an opportunity for people to put in their feedback by Tuesday, and we'll include the link in the information, but I will also include it at the end of this chat. But they're looking to avoid the need for people to provide information that they wish to give to Stats New Zealand to respond to census questions. And they're going to be doing that, it looks like, by connecting a whole lot of different registers together, which will allow them to affect Stats New Zealand, that is, to effectively find out the information about you without you volunteering it.
Oh, that's a development then, isn't it?
That's the only way I perceive that they could go censusless.
So this is the whole digital, what do we call it? Is it some kind of digital ID or?
It's a linking together. More to investigate this, but and I will be doing much longer session on it. We didn't have enough time today because of the retreat and the opportunity to give feedback on that's really important and due before this. But this is an opportunity where the Stats New Zealand appear to be getting information from different places that they will then link together to effectively find out the information they need to.
So where would they get my income from? IRD.
IRD, correct. And, you know, you've got a situation where you've got an IRD number different from your NIH number or NHI number, whichever.
So they plug those two together.
And it looks like they may be trying to connect those numbers so that they've got the one person but your various different numbers. And, look, they're doing it overseas in the state, around the world. There's the linking of banking information with supermarket information with telecommunication information. And we've got registers already that the government has. I think there's four different registers that they've got. And those registers are able to feed in so that you're effectively having your a census answered for you, but by the information that Stats New Zealand is combing from elsewhere.
Wow, that's kind of freaky.
Freaky. Concerning, done a bit under stealth. They're celebrating,
as always,
suggesting that they're modernising the census so that the 2828 version, you know, you won't have to fill out a form yourself. We will find out that information about you ourselves.
Do you think they got hit with a lot of pushback and a really bad rep, latest census, and they kind of don't want to go there? And also we had the census data being basically traded in a marae, and it seems that Stats NZ from the early talk had some sort of awareness of that. So,
correct. And it looks like that's a real issue. You know, you've got some significant privacy breaches. But again, here is one of the cornerstone pillars of what I consider is our fundamental legal rights, privacy, being undermined and being misused, and Stats New Zealand taking a very cavalier approach. And they've got a new act, Stats legislation of 2022, you know, which is being shaped for them to be able to do a lot more of these things, you know, disrespecting privacy or ignoring it entirely, holding on to personal information longer than they need to. There is some real things that spotlight needs to be put on this. And I had alarm bells go off when they said they were going to stop the manual census, the one where you get to decide the information.
Yeah, which has been going since time immemorial.
Time immemorial, absolutely. And it's such an important part. It's a part of being a New Zealander. It assists them, our government, with deciding what to do, where to spend money, where to focus.
They've done a great job with the information, haven't they?
Yeah, and look, they have. So I encourage everyone to jump
on. I don't
know
if they have.
I encourage everyone to jump onto the Stats New Zealand website and give feedback on the modernising your approach, and just let them know how you feel about, well, where are you going to be getting this information from? Ask them questions.
And who gets to look at it?
Yeah, and who gets access to this? Are you going to then do what we've got a situation in Australia with the digital ID? Are there going to be private organisations that will be able to access this information? Well, quite frankly, you haven't done yourself a lot of good to date with holding on to information and keeping it privacy and private, and the privacy breaches that we've got. You know, the digital environment just simply allows more breaches more regularly and in a much, you know, much easier way to get much access to much larger volumes of people's personal information and data. And I'm not prepared, and I would have concerns about Stats New Zealand collecting that on my behalf and linking it.
Yeah. All right, so we'll keep an eye on that one, right?
Absolutely. So the opportunity to give feedback on that expires, I think it's the 18th of June, which I think is a Tuesday. Is that next Tuesday?
I'll take your word for it, but that's not very long.
No, and look,
we found out about it now. It's only a week and a half or something away, or less than a week away.
Well, it is a week away, and I must say I was so focused on WHO things in May that I didn't see it come through, and it came through on the 8th of May and was published. I'll start writing a few emails too and just asking them to, if they'll extend the opportunity to feedback, so that we do get a bit more time. But I do encourage everyone to give their feedback. There is an online form, and, you know, yeah. Let them know what you think about it. And again, you don't need to overthink it. If it smells funny and you don't like the smell of it, let them know why you don't.
Mm. Well, it doesn't pass the smell test here for me at the moment, though yeah. I'm Mr. Suspicious these days on everything.
Yeah, we just need to be cautious. And as long as it's clearly and carefully worked through and done for the right reasons, then that's great. But, you know, at this point in time, I'm not filled with a whole lot of faith that, you know, our government is actually acting for us.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's call time on our Legal Hub for today. Interesting one. Anyway, Katie, good to have you, and nice to have Sean Rush before for another Legal Hub. We'll do it again next week. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Paul. Good morning, listeners. Have a wonderful day.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.